Thanks to our listeners, Issues Etc. has operated in the black for 7 consecutive years. With 3 weeks left in 2015, we're $55,000 short of making expenses. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. at the end of 2015. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There are pictures of this artifact. It's not something small. Sometimes when we talk about biblical archaeology, we're just dealing with little pieces of things, pieces of pottery, tiny little artifacts. In this case, we're dealing with something that's fairly large. Not a whole building, but the depiction of a building, or perhaps it is the depiction of a building, of Herod's temple. And it was found, this carved stone, in Galilee. What does it say about synagogue worship, and what does it say about first century Judaism and temple worship? It's said to have dated from the time when Herod's temple still stood. And joining us to talk about it, Dr. Craig Evans, professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College and author of several books, including Jesus and the Remains of His Days, Studies in Jesus, and The Evidence of Material Culture. Dr. Evans, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be with you.
First of all, let's get our temples straight, because we actually have three in the history of first century of Palestine. Which temple are we talking about that is allegedly depicted on this carved stone?
It's undoubtedly the temple that Herod the Great built, and we still call it the Second Temple. There's the First Temple, the Temple of Solomon, that was destroyed. And then when we start talking about the Second Temple, we mean the Second Temple that was built after the exile, the return of the Jewish people from Babylon or Persia. But in the first century, some years before Jesus was born, Herod actually dismantled that Second Temple and rebuilt it and simply made it magnificent. That's the temple we believe is depicted on the decorated stone that we're talking about, found inside the synagogue, ruins of the synagogue at Magdala.
Now, tell us a little bit about the location itself. First Magdala, and then kind of zeroing in on the target, so to speak, this synagogue.
Yeah, the synagogue is found, we're pretty sure it's Magdala. I don't think we've actually found an inscription that confirms that, but there's pretty good circumstantial evidence and some historical evidence that the location, now we're talking about the northwest shore of the Sea of Galilee, so it's in the northern part of Israel today. It's not too many miles from Capernaum, the base of Jesus' operations. So that's, and it's probably the Magdala that for which Mary Magdalene gets her name. So it's a synagogue that was discovered there in 2009, excavated in 9:10 through about 14. The excavations have been suspended for now, but they will be resumed. A synagogue was found, and in the middle of the synagogue floor was this decorated stone. It was the first of its kind, though I will be able to tell you, not the last, but it was the first of its kind that was discovered.
What do you mean, first but not last?
Well, another one was found the very next year. The excavators, in fact, if you stand at Magdala and look at the hills and look in a northwesterly direction, you actually are looking at one of the hills where the other one was found. It's Horvat Kur, and I know the archaeologists working there. And it's a 4th century synagogue, and then they couldn't believe their eyes. All this talk about the Magdala stone, decorated stone, and then there, lo and behold, in the lower portion of one of the walls, as they unearth it, is another decorated stone that's been placed secondarily in the wall. Now, I said it's a 4th century synagogue, but they determined that the stone is pre-70. It's 1st century and very similar to the 1st century Magdala stone. So we're no longer talking about a unique one-off stone, but two. And I'm beginning to think we'll probably find more as we find more synagogues. And that's very important, as we'll touch upon as the show continues. Very important, for it says something about the religious faith of the Jewish people in Galilee.
So that was my question. The fact that this is found in a Galilean synagogue suggests a couple things, but probably the most significant really here that doesn't require as much speculation is how the Jewish people in the first century Palestine were worshiping. What was the relationship between synagogue and temple?
Well, what it shows is, as you got further and further away from Jerusalem, the Jewish people had to focus on something that represented the temple in Jerusalem. And so, if you lived as far north as Galilee, then you didn't go to the Jerusalem frequently. You might go once a year, maybe not even that often. And so, what we now believe is that stone represented the temple. It was like a miniature temple that exhibited the principal symbols of the temple. And so you had the bread of the presence, the table of the presence, the showbread table. You had the menorah, the seven-branched candelabra. You have pillars that represent the pillars of the sanctuary itself. Other symbols, the large jugs, fronds, and other things that symbolized the temple and the kinds of sacrifices and activities that took place in the temple precincts. And so in the synagogue, people sit around on the on seats along the walls. Don't think of it as a church today or modern synagogue today, rows of pews with people looking forward. Rather, they were seated in the perimeter looking toward the middle of the synagogue. They didn't look at the speaker very much. They looked at something in the center, and it was that stone. And the stone was oriented facing south, facing Jerusalem. So I think during worship, during prayer, during singing, during the reading of Scripture, even the homily, they're looking at this stone and thinking about the temple. It's as though they're there in Jerusalem in spirit, if not in body.
So that is it's a way of saying, you know, if we could, we would be gathering at the temple, but we can't.
Yeah, you got it exactly right, Todd. And what this tells us, and this is profound, the idea that the Galilean Jews were kind of off doing their own thing, or they saw themselves as detached from their southern brothers and sisters, cosmopolitan, Hellenistic, et cetera, I think that's a misreading. And we're beginning to think, you know what, I think these Galilean Jews were very devout. It took their faith seriously, and you put Jesus in that context, and it makes sense how he surrounds himself with people who are very committed to Israel's historic faith, and they march on Jerusalem with this message, as it were. And so it creates a new dimension for understanding the Jewish faith in Galilee.
Now, a couple other questions here, Dr. Evans. One of the press reports about the artifact quoted someone who speculated that it might have been a table of sorts for the reading of the Torah, for the Torah scrolls. What are your thoughts?
I think that that's as good a guess as any. I know the scholars who have been considering that, know them personally. And I've looked at the stone, and I mean the actual stone, and not just the replicas that most people see, tourists and so on. I've seen photos of the Horvat Kur stone and have talked to the archaeologists involved in recovering it. And it does seem like a very plausible idea that it's a base on which would rest a reading stand where the Torah scroll would be unfolded and read from. And we say that because the Magdala stone is not level. It's not, it has four legs. Two of the legs at one end are higher than the legs at the other. So it has a sloping effect. And we wonder if a stand then rested on that, where a scroll would then be unrolled and somebody would read from it.
Is it possible, Dr. Evans, that given the fact that Jesus spent a lot of time in Galilee, his entire phase of his ministry, early phase of his ministry, is a Galilean phase, according to the Synoptic Gospels, that Jesus himself might have spent time in this synagogue?
It's quite possible. The Magdala Synagogue, as best as we can determine from coins and other indicators of date, was probably built in the 20s, possibly a rebuilt building. We're not sure of that. There is something beneath it, and was expanded in the 40s and then destroyed in the 60s. And so Jesus very likely was in that synagogue in the 30s, in the late 20s, early 30s, however we date his ministry. So when he was in that synagogue, the synagogue would have been relatively new. It would be just a few years old. And I think that's very plausible. Now, whether or not Mary of Magdala, Mary Magdalene, as a woman, was in that smallish synagogue that also had a small school attached to it, that's another question. We can't be sure of that. But I think it's probable that Jesus stood in that very synagogue and preached.
When we uncover more of these synagogue stones that are depictions with the symbols and the depictions of the first century temple in Jerusalem, the person who says, "What does that mean? How do we need to reorient our thinking about first century Jewish life?" How would you explain it in simple terms?
I would say it shows us that there were Jews in Galilee who were very strongly loyal to the temple and to Jerusalem. They were southward looking. They didn't see themselves as separatists or off doing their own thing, but saw themselves loyal. And then when you look at Jesus' ministry, you see him coming down frequently, as Luke says, as John says, frequently visiting, even as a young lad, visiting Jerusalem. It makes sense. That's coherent. It fits together.
I got to ask you, though, having you actually laid eyes on this stone yourself, what is it like to look at something? There are a lot of places where you could say, well, maybe Jesus stood here, or maybe that happened, or 10 feet below the ground, maybe. This is the ground he walked upon. What's it like to actually lay eyes on something that more likely than not Jesus himself would have laid eyes on?
Well, I tell you, it really is something. This is one situation where it's not just where Jesus might have walked, because after all, you can walk around on the temple steps at the south end of the Temple Mount, and Jesus likely walked those very steps. There's the pavement that's at the southwest corner of the Temple Mount below. Very likely Jesus and his disciples walked there also. You can walk around, I mean, before it was roped off, I was able, while it was being excavated, walk the very floor of the synagogue at Magdala. But what's interesting here is I've actually touched a stone that Jesus may well have touched. I mean, he may not only have looked at it, he may have touched it, he may have stood by it, he may have read scripture right adjacent to it. And that is that really is exciting. I mean, that makes your skin tingle.
Dr. Craig Evans is professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College. He's author of several books, including Jesus and the Remains of His Day, Studies in Jesus, and The Evidence of Material Culture. You can find a link to that book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Evans, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Todd. Enjoyed being with you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Staying in the realm of archaeology, we'll go from New Testament to Old Testament to one of the brief glimmers of kind of renewed orthodoxy, Reformation, if you will, in the Old Testament, the reign of King Hezekiah, and a clay imprint that bears his name found recently in Jerusalem. Stay tuned.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Thanks to our listeners, Issues Etc. has operated in the black for 7 consecutive years. With 3 weeks left in 2015, we're $55,000 short of making expenses. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check Make your check payable to Issues, Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for thinking of Issues, Etc. at the end of 2015.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Are you concerned that nativity scenes aren't being displayed in public places? Why not display one at your church or your home? The Outdoor Nativity Store produces durable, affordable, and American-made outdoor nativities for Christians around the world. To view a variety of nativity sets, visit OutdoorNativityStore.com. These nativities will hold up under the harshest weather conditions, snow, ice, and wind. The Outdoor Nativity Store, OutdoorNativityStore.com.